This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Podcast for you. I'm in Anaheim, Botch back in Vancouver. The road trip is over, and so essentially is the season, even though there's 11 games to go. Canucks mathematically eliminated from postseason contention last night with yet another shutout loss, this time at the hands of the Anaheim Ducks. The podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express, and your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out. Two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or visit them at eagleridgegm.com. We want to thank Woody's Pub for being great hosts for us at last week's podcast. But Botch, here we are. We're separated, but brought together by technology.
Yeah, we are, and I can see you. You look fantastic. You're all clean shaven, hair is brushed. Like, you look like you almost, like, you look how I envision myself looking, like, opening night next fall. Like, right now, I am just, like, I'm just torn and frayed and disheveled and almost brought to exhaustion from watching this team play hockey and try to win games. Like, they are putting on a clinic in how to tank. They were 15 points up on last place February 1st, J-Pat. 15 points on Feb 1st. You know how difficult it is to go from 15 points up to 3 up in a matter of 6 weeks in the NHL? It's nearly impossible. I would have said it was impossible if you asked me on February 1st. It has now happened, and I would suggest to you, like, I look terrible because when we were at Woody's and I was feeling great and I was still on the positive vibes of Friedmanism, and, you know, we had some supporters there and the stanchion was there. And I told you that, you know, 6 wins was possible for this team down the stretch in the last 15. And as nobody pointed out to me on Twitter last night, 6 wins, like 6 goals looks like it may be difficult. And I was going back and forth with some people watching the game last night. And I started to wonder, like, it honestly, like, maybe I blacked out for stretches of the late run last year. But right now, being in it, this team feels worse. Like, this experience is worse. And someone suggested to me it's probably because of the Besser drop-off. Like, it's been so significant having him in the lineup compared to when he's out of the lineup. That's part of it, and I tend to agree. But, like, you break down this lineup, and the Sedins have disappeared. They're not getting any help. They don't have a winger to play with. I concede that. But also, they've disappeared. Like, it's not just the team isn't scoring. It's that there's not even chances. Like, they were celebrating. You didn't see the broadcast, but it's the middle of the third period.
No, I didn't. I didn't see the broadcast. I was living the game in first-person reality, man. Like, no, I didn't see that. I had to sit through that myself.
No, but what? Then you know what this play I'm talking about. It's a bad angle. It's not all that close to the net. For any other team, this would just be a nothing play in a game. But Jake Virtanen has the puck. He's got a clear sight line to the net, and he misses the net. And it was celebrated on the broadcast, like, this amazing scoring chance. And if he just got it on that, it possibly could have got in. Like, and I just thought, like, is this how pathetic and sad we are right now that just a generic shot from 25 feet out is celebrated like a great scoring chance? Is it that bad, I asked myself. And J-Pat, it really is.
Well, and I told this story on the radio yesterday that, you know, I'm staying in the hotel here in Anaheim, like 2 blocks from Disneyland. And it is the happiest place on earth. And the people and these families, and it's spring break here in the States. And like, kids are just, they're bouncing off the walls because they're going to Disneyland. And I'm standing in the Starbucks line and, you know, like, not looking at anybody. I'm just kind of minding my own business. And like, I'm sure I stuck out in the hotel lobby because everybody else is just like, they're incredibly excited about what they're doing with their day. And my day was going to a hockey game to watch this team that I cover on a nightly basis, you know, fail to score for a third straight game. And so, you know, I don't mind blending into the crowd, but I think I stood out yesterday just because, like, it's impossible. You can't put on a happy face. I can't be happy for these people that are going to have these amazing days at Disneyland. Like, I know exactly what I'm getting myself into. And sure enough, there I was at Honda Center last night watching a third, 3 hours of hockey. I've gone from Phoenix to LA to Anaheim, three games on this trip, 180 minutes of hockey, and I haven't seen a Canuck goal. And to your point, like, I really haven't seen many that even qualify as, like, legitimate scoring chances. Like, they got fired up. There was a lot of talk post-game about, you know, Delzato hitting the post, but even at that, he hit the outside of the post. Like, it wasn't inside of the post and sitting on the goal line. It hit the outside of the post and deflected into the corner, and that was that for, you know, maybe the best scoring chance they had on the night.
Yeah, and if you think about the injuries here, and I was thinking about this today, like, okay, Gauntz has been out forever, but he's been around forever. Tanev's out. He's been around forever. Granlund's been on the team for a couple of years. Eriksson's been on the team since June 2016. Berchi before that, and Besser was 2015 draft pick. So none of these guys have been acquired in the past year and a half. So no one that they've added basically in the past 2 years, and all the moves they made, they're not helping at all. Like, they have in the acquisitions that they've made in the past couple of years, none of them are helping this team. You know, Sam Gagner has—it's been an incredible failure. It just has been. Like, this is a guy who had 50 points last year, and he may not get to 30. You talk about Delzato, and you know, he plays all the games. He was supposed to add offense, but he's not, and he hasn't. And I, you know, his six goals is probably going to be celebrated at the end of the year as some amazing accomplishment. And you go up and down the lineup of all of the guys that they added for supposed depth. You know, remember the beginning of the year that this was going to be the team that had the depth. They had real NHL players. And I wrote about this in the Province, but I had this thought, and it's like it comes from a dark, bleak, desolate place. But it was a thought that I had, like, am I not yearning for Megna? Do I not want Megna and Chaput on this team? And I think I do. I think I want Chaput playing with the Sedins right now. And if you told me that a year ago, if we could go back in time and say, Botch, a year from now, you were going to want to see the Sedins, because that's what it was down the stretch. It was the Sedins with Chaput, and it was the team was helpless or looked helpless. I miss those days. I yearn for those days. I miss Chaput with the Sedins. I miss Magna centering a third line. At least he was fast. At least he brought speed. There's no speed on this team, J-Pat. There's no size. There's no physicality. There's nothing. And it's really disheartening, because now I start to take all of this, as we all should, a step forward. And we start to say, okay, when Pettersson arrives, when Dallin arrives, when Gaudette gets here, what makes us believe that this management group is going to be able to surround those guys with the types of players that they need, as Travis always says, to win games? Like, he spent all year trying to teach these guys how to win, all year trying to teach these guys how to play 200-foot games, defensive games. And it has, in the end, I mean, three shutouts in a row, it sucked the offense right out of them.
Well, and a couple of things. One is, just back to your win prediction for the rest of the season. I thought completely offside and total bullshit on your part that in the Provies, you copped to it, but then, of course, you had to bring my prediction of Marcus Granlund and his 24. Like, you couldn't just leave your win prediction by itself. No, you needed the security blanket of my Marcus Granlund goal total. Like, I was so pissed off. I read the Provies and I get a kick out of them, and, you know, sometimes I'm able to contribute to them in some small way. I was pissed off the other night when I read that, because that to me was totally offside.
That was bad. I agree. I do apologize for that. It's just, like, sometimes when you're sinking to the bottom, you're just, like, trying to reach for something to pull you up. And I realized, you know, I made a decision. You know what? I'm going to try to bring this fucker down with me and remind everyone that I'm not the only one with bad predictions out there. Remember, this guy predicted 24 goals for Granlund. But I think that you do Like, I feel that you almost have an out for that one because Granlund was hurt and didn't play the last 2 months of the season. So, remember, like, right before that, Green was predicting he could get to 18-19. So, I think that that's our lasting thought of Granlund almost.
Yeah, his next goal might come in 18-19. Well, it will come in 18-19. Forget about getting to 18 or 19. Yeah. But I asked Green last night post-game, like, okay, now it's official. And again, we've known for months that they weren't making the playoffs, but, you know, mathematically eliminated, 11 games to go. You know, does anything change? Because what they're doing right now isn't working. And I know that, you know, they don't have much down on the farm, but we've heard about these young defensemen that are knocking on the door. And again, you got to sell something to the fan base here with 11 to go. So I'm not ruling out a recall of one of your boys there, Chaput or Megna. Again,
well, just... it would seem a waste, though. I mean, if it is going to, they've got one recall left. If it is going to be non-emergency recall, it's got to be something to give people some juice, some kind of hope. I've argued over and over and over that, you know, I don't want to rehash it here again, but I've made my case many times that the guy should be Demko, but I'm willing to settle for at this point, Breezeball is what, 3 goals? Like that to me, I would accept that and hype that up as the great arrival of Breezeball at this point. I do a big feature on him, how he's this incredible prospect out of a third round pick. What a great job Jim did in finding this guy. Give him to Vancouver and I will shower him with some positivity and love. It's got to be like, you can't, I mean, you've hyped up Breezeball, you've hyped up Chatfield. We all know about Demko. Like give us one of these guys because I can't go through the next number of games just watching Biega and Delzato and Gagne and all these, even Markstrom. And Markstrom's been fine. They've actually played well defensively, and he's been okay. This is probably his best stretch, honestly, of the season. But we need in this city, we need something to hold on to reach out for.
Well, you know, at the outset of this 3-game trip, like if you had told me 94 shots on goal and you hold these opponents to 7 goals, like I would have thought that there was an outcome in there somewhere, but forget an outcome, there hasn't even been a goal. And so again, like, you know, and we talked about this, like the vibe in the room has been weird, and that Minnesota game, like we're all just looking at each other after the game because we've run out of questions and they've run out of answers. And it really was a strange feeling for me, at least in that locker. Like usually I have enough questions. It's not an issue, but like I had nothing. And imagine 3 shutout losses later. And there I am in the locker room last night and I'm trying to come up with questions. And it's amazing to hear, you know, they're trying to tell you about all the good things that they've done and how hard they battled and they're all in the fight together. But like this goalless drink just hangs over every single conversation. Like I don't dispute, like they played all right last night in Anaheim. For this group, they played okay. In Los Angeles the other night, 35 shots. Like, you know, it wasn't a terrible performance, but every conversation you have with a player, every conversation you have with Travis Green, like it stops and starts with the fact that they've gone 3.5 hours without putting a puck in the net.
Right. And I do, there is some kind of hive mind with the team. Like it does more than other seasons. It feels like they are being directed to have one opinion in of the group. And it's been this way all season long where everyone in that locker room trashed the Arizona game. And then the next one against Minnesota, everyone, you know, hailed it as this big accomplishment that they competed. And it's like they come to this agreement of these are the games that we will say that we had the effort was there, or we played as hard as we could. And then every once in a while, here's a game we'll throw up there and say the effort wasn't good enough. They are undermanned. They have a ridiculous lineup right now. And the pro scouting staff has to wear that. Jim has to wear that. And part of the problem, like one of the questions I get is why do the group of fans out there who have been, you know, asking for a rebuild, asking the team to tank, why are they mad or upset or angered that the team is now, you know, looks like it's kind of this grease pig sliding right down the standings to the bottom. Like they look destined. They look destined to finish worst overall. So why are the rebuilding type fans upset with this? And I touched on it earlier. And it's because of the goals that the management sets. If you set goals to be competitive, to bring kids up in a winning environment, to be one of the better teams, and you make decisions that you think will get you there, and those decisions do the exact opposite, you lose the confidence of the market. You lose the confidence of some fans, and people start to wonder, okay, do you know what you're doing? And that's the question that a lot of the fans have right now, because like Mott doesn't look like an NHL player. Dow doesn't look like an NHL player. Leipzig is okay, but he's in a spot where, you know, you can't expect him to succeed, you know, on a top line with Bo Horvat. And when you look again at the injuries, yeah, they are missing Brock Besser and they are missing Sven Berchi. But other than that, are there any goal scorers really out of the lineup? Like, you know, Berchi's okay. He's an okay goal scorer. And obviously Besser is great. But should it be this bleak when you pull two guys, two top six guys out of the lineup? Is that, does that make any sense? It's like, I'm actually, like, I know you called this when Besser was hurt and you looked down this lineup and you said, like, man, like, this is a team that's not going to score any goals at all. And you came up with the stat, goals after Besser. Where are we on that, by the way?
Well, the same place we've been goals for, same place we've been for a week, three. And you see Jokinen, exactly. Jokinen's got two of them, and he was sitting two seats right from me in the press box again last night.
Right. So it should not be this bad. You pull Berchi, like with the other guys, Tanev never scores, Eriksson never scores, Granlund hardly ever scored all year. So you pull out Berchi and Besser, and you're having a team that's setting franchise, or about to, may set a franchise record for no goals. And guys like us are, you know, keeping tabs on goals after Besser. And now I think they've played five games and you still only need one hand to count them.
Right. And I went with 16 games remaining in the season. And Besser, I think, was still in the lineup at that point. And I went back and looked at last year because the bottom absolutely fell out on this group one year ago. And they scored 29 goals over the final 16 games. So didn't even average two a game. Wow. And I asked... I know it does. Exactly. It sounds like a ton. And so I asked, like, can this group score more than 29 goals over the final 16? And of course, like, we've got the answer already because you're right. Like, they're just stuck in this rut of three. And now the question becomes, and like, there is a part of my brain that is, it's not when the next goal is going to come. It is if the next goal is going to come. And I tweeted this out this morning and I got a lot of people coming back at me. Maybe they misunderstood, but like, in some small, weird way, this goalless streak, I think, will keep the attention of some people who might otherwise have completely checked out on the Vancouver Canucks. Like, I'm seeing on Twitter lots of people, I'm done, I'm finished, they're mathematically eliminated, that's it, I've got other things to do. And I get that, I totally understand, and lots of people will just walk away. But if I told you that they were going to lose the final 11 games and every single one was going to be 3-1, like, would you have any reason to watch? No. But if I told you that there was a goal, there was an Easter egg hidden in these final 11 goals a game somewhere, you know full well, and like, there's lots of people out there that are going to hang on to see when that next goal comes and who is going to score it. So, like, it's perverse. I get that. But there is a morbid curiosity now around this Vancouver Canuck team that can set a franchise record for goalless stretch on Saturday at home against the San Jose Sharks.
Right, and but the problem, like I even like I pointed this out, that if you count scoring chances and not goals, you know, is this team going to be any further ahead? And I'm not sure. There were more than like three legitimate scoring chances in last night's game, and like, why not? Like, I heard you, I mentioned earlier, I asked Green about this after the game, and I heard you talking about it on the post-game show. But what's keeping him from trying different things, like, especially things that haven't worked all year? For example, Gagné in that spot on the power play is never going to work. Anyone that has watched any hockey, I don't care if you've played, if you've coached, if you've never played, it takes you 2 seconds to realize he doesn't have the shot to command that area of the ice. He doesn't. He just doesn't. It's just a fact that no one can deny. Noel Brown can deny it. Travis Green will deny it if we ask him about it. but he shouldn't, and deep down he must know. So why isn't he putting Vertanen in there? Why isn't he putting Reed Boucher? Hell, why not put Ben Hutton? Like, why not? Or and yeah, Ben Hutton and Travis have a relationship that is fractured. I've heard that there's been arguments between the two of them, and it's something that needs to be mended, and if this is going to work long term. And he obviously doesn't ever seem to want to give Hutton the carrot, but you have nothing to lose. Like, you've given him the stick for so long. You've made him a healthy scratch so many times. You've been on him about his weight. You've talked about him with conditioning in public. Like, he's taken the hits, man. Like, there's no player on the team that has taken more hits from the coach this year than Hutton has. So what's wrong at the end of the season for giving him a plum and saying, like, look, you're down, it's been tough, but here's some power play time. We're going to put you on the first unit for however long. He actually, was looking at this earlier today, led the team in point production in terms of points per minute played on the power play. No one was better than Hutton last season. No one on this defense was better than Hutton last season. No one on the team was better than Hutton last season. So why not give him a chance? Why not see what he can do here in the final number of games? And what's the worst that can happen? That you increase the value, hopefully, if he can get some points of an asset that you may look to move in the offseason if you know it's not going to work long term.
No, I'm totally on board with that, and that's why I asked him the question last night. It just seems crazy to me to continue doing what you're doing here now that these games mean absolutely nothing, and you do have, I mean, you only got 11 games left. Like, it's not a lot of time if you do want to experiment and get a look at certain guys in some different situations. So put Vertanen in that spot, see how it goes. If it doesn't work for him there, put him in front of the net on the power play. Like, again, what do you have to lose there? Sid Edler, like, Edler doesn't need to be playing 26 and a half minutes at this stage of the season. And if Hutton's not going to get power play time, then give Stetcher an opportunity. Stetcher's probably been there. One or 1A among their defensemen since Christmas. Like, he's had a good second half. So, you know, again, you talk about throwing some guys some love and some honey. Like, give Stetcher an opportunity. Break up the Twins. Like, again, like, it's just not happening for them. Henrik's gone six without a point, and Daniel's got one assist in that time. Like, it's not like this magic. You know, and they've got each other to lean on. Like, you talk about, they don't have another winger, but they do have each other, and it's just not happening right now. So, again, split them up. See what, like, what's the worst that could happen? You score a goal? Like, the logic right now, if they continue to do what they've been doing over the last week, certainly, but the last month, really, like, it just makes no, they got four wins in their last 20 games. Like, experiment. Try to have some fun. If you're Travis Green, like, I would think that would just be, like, I think you'd get excited about having the opportunity now that, you know, the shackles are off, essentially, in terms of pretending that these games mean something. Mix it up, shake it up a little.
Yeah, the idea of splitting the Twins wasn't that crazy all that long ago. Like, AV used it as a tool regularly. When they were slumping, when the team wasn't going good, he would split them, and that was a really good team, obviously, we know, of the era. That was a team that was trying to win games, as many as possible, and he would do it all the time. And once Willie got here, it became an absolute non-starter. He wouldn't even consider splitting them on the power play. He wouldn't consider splitting them on, at evens. And somehow that Willie-ism, that Willie era, has spilled over to Travis Green. I don't understand why this is not an option. I'm not saying, you know, do it all the time. I'm not saying do it all season. But it was used and used effectively by a coach in the recent past to split the Sedins, to invigorate them, to send messages to the club. I don't understand why this is a non-starter for Travis Green. It seems curious that a guy who changes lines as often as he does, and he may change lines more than AV did. When we used to joke about the blender machine that Vigneault had, Green may do it more, but the one thing he won't do is split the Sedins, and it boggles my mind why he won't do that.
Right, and look, I know that Brandon Sutter is no savior for this hockey club, but he did score 17 goals last year.
Like, I want to apologize. Like, I know that I fought and I hailed against the idea of Sutter on the power play. But I'd way rather see him there than Sam Gagné. I know Sutter has a shot. He has a legit NHL shot. like, why is that? Like, why can't he be there? Like, just to get a goal for the team. It's another one I don't understand is his kind of use of Sutter, who's been used in this matchup role all season long, and it hasn't been all that effective. Like, I hate to tell Travis Green, but it hasn't worked all that well. This has not been a great team at shutting other offenses down. They've been better at it lately, but over the course of the last 43, 40 games, they've been the second worst in the NHL in terms of giving up goals. So why not move Sutter on the lineup? Give someone else a run in that matchup role if he must. I think he spent a lot of last night's game going Horvat top line against top line. Well, if you do that, that should free up Sutter to move him into different spots. And the penalty, it's not like you got to save Sutter for the penalty kill. That's been bad all season.
Man, when we're done with this, like, I am sending the authorities over to your place because I am worried now. In the first half hour of this podcast, you've lobbied for Magna and Chaput to be recalled and Brandon Sutter to be put on the power play. You're trying to transport us back in time to when Willie D was in charge.
I'm going to have to take a shower after I'm done this podcast. Here I am. Like, believe it or not, I am sitting here calling for Magna to be brought up. I want Chaput with the Sedins, and I want Sutter. I want Willie back! Do I? Like, this is crazy. I can't even believe I'm saying this. But that's what happens when I watch a team as kind of soul-crushing as this one has been, and it has been that lately. It for sure has been.
Special.
Put a poll out yesterday about, like, has Travis Green done a good job this season? And, man, I looked at that, and I was honestly torn. Like, I spent most of the year believing the answer to that is yes. I like a ton of his moves. I like how active he is with the team. I like the whole concept of him always meeting with players and guys coming in and out of his office all day, and he's inspiring guys at certain points. And I do think that he's got dealt a shitty hand. I do think that this is an inadequate roster with inadequate depth and you know, not enough when the starters are in the lineup, and woefully understaffed when some of the starters are out of the lineup. So I do see that he's been dealt a bad hand, but then I look at the overall picture and I'm thinking, like, you know, you have to ask yourself honestly, like, who is better now than they were at the start of the year? And the list is not long.
Right. And I think we've had this conversation at times, sort of checking in on guys. And, you know, again, second half of the season, I think Stetcher has taken some strides in the right direction. Vertanen, I mean, the jury is still out and there's a ton of work to do. But, I mean, in the last couple of weeks, he's looked like a National Hockey Leaguer at the very least. But I don't know that he's made huge strides this year compared to where he was at the end of last season down in Utica. And then, you know, Goldobin's gone missing completely, and I sort of feel like I've given up on Goldobin. I know there's 11 games to go. I don't know if he gets into all of them. Travis kind of threw some faint praise about how he was in the battle in Los Angeles on Monday night, but, you know, if that's what it's come to, like, if that's what we're gauging a successful night for Nikolai Goldobin is, he's in the battle as opposed to not being in the battle, and they're still getting shut out, and he's not doing anything and not generating any kind of offense, like, has he developed at all? Like, Ray Ferraro asked that question. Like, from the time they acquired him to now, like, does anybody have any sense of what Nikolai Goldobin can be for the Vancouver Canucks?
Like, I think it's gone the opposite way. And it's like the anti-development program that Goldobin has been on, where they have, you know, stress defense, stress playing the right way, stress the 200-foot game. And they've taken all of the offensive creativity out of him. Like, he was impressive in moments when he first arrived in Vancouver. J-Pat, I honestly don't see a lick of that right now. Like, I don't see a guy at all who flashes skill and speed. Remember, he had the breakaway, and he was doing things, you know, under Willie when he first arrived, where he thought, okay, this is something. I remember, like, even this year, IMAC was writing, like, you know, Goldobin was ridiculously hyped when he first got brought up. Well, I don't think we ever ridiculously hyped him. I think it was we saw flashes, we wanted to see more of that, and we said, like, give him more time, give him more opportunities, let him play, let him reach out, you know, stretch out a bit offensively. And it's been kind of the opposite over this course of the season, and they've taken a guy who flashed regularly, at least regularly enough that caught our attention, into a guy that you never see it anymore. Like, you just don't see the flair that he's shown in the AHL, and you certainly don't see the flair that he showed when he first got called up.
Yeah, and here we are. I mean, it's been over a year since the trade, obviously, and, you know, people still can point to basically two plays, the breakaway in Los Angeles and the time that he turned Doughty inside out and scored as well. But, like, at some point, you got to move beyond being able to point to just two specific examples. Like, I want to leave the building some night thinking, my God, like, wow. Like, he was so, you know, hands down the best player on the ice. But I kind of get the feeling like that ship has sailed, and that's just not going to ever happen for Nikolai Goldobin in the National Hockey League.
Right. So I think that, I just don't see this working long-term, and I think that his camp at the beginning of the year was dropping hints that he may go back and play in Russia, and maybe that happens, or maybe he's the sweetener in like a Hutton. Like I am convinced that they are going to try to move Hutton in the offseason, and to do that you're going to need a sweetener because they paid this guy $2.8 million, and it's created a lot of problems. Like, I remember at the time when it was Hutton's second season, and it was in November when he agreed to that contract, and it seemed about $1 million, maybe $800,000 per year of an overpayment, and it seemed like why would they sign him so early in the season? Like, why prioritize the Ben Hutton signing? And I remember one of the theories was that, you know, Hutton didn't want it weighing on him over the course of the year, and he can't deal with that kind of weight and worried. They don't want him worried about a contract extension. That's fine, but the contract has actually created more problems, I think. And part of me is concerned that the team expects him to be a $2.8 million guy. Like, they look at it like, why aren't you meeting these expectations? A $2.8 million player. So I think that there is some thought of that in the organization. I also worry because it's March and the coach is calling him out for his conditioning. And there was, asking him to lose weight in March in the NHL. Like, J-Pat, that does not happen often. This is not a common thing where coaches publicly call out the conditioning of NHL players at the end of a season. Like, it just doesn't happen. So, you know, is there some entitlement there? Was there, like, I'm a huge Hutton guy. Like, I really like I really like when he's on his game and he's playing well. I enjoy watching him play hockey. I enjoy watching him play at the beginning of the year. I'm not saying he was great. He was fine, though. He was fine. He fit right in. He was an NHL defenseman, and he was fine. He does not look fine right now. And when I hear the coach say, well, part of the reason is conditioning, he's not meeting these requirements, I start to think, okay, did he kick back and relax when he got the $2.8 million? I mean, there were guys a couple of years ago who the Sedins and Willie were calling out for being entitled. Sorry, but if it's March and the coach is wondering about your conditioning, that reeks of entitlement.
But back to your point about the contract and not living up to it, like, that's such flawed logic to be the management group that gives the guy a $2.8 million contract and then wonder why he's not playing like a $2.8 million player if he was never one in the first place. And if it was just one player, fine. But you can say the same thing. You can apply that same logic to Louis Erickson. You can apply that same logic to Sam Gagne, to Anders Nilsson. Like, this is just and Brandon Sutter. Like, the track record here is ridiculous. And there's so many mixed messages, and we've talked about that throughout this entire season. And, you know, this has been a week of more mixed messages. Want to get to Gudbranson here in a sec, but first, March's truck month at Eagle Ridge GM. Get up to $11,000 total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. We'll talk about Gudbranson. You wrote about him at great length last night in the Provies. Before that, though, Tanev, back around the team, skating again. A chance that he plays on Saturday. Given where they are and now in this tank battle and headed for the bottom, is there any value whatsoever in playing Chris Tanev? Like, if you were calling the shots, would you have Chris Tanev play another game this season?
Yeah, I actually would, because I think that if... if you want to have all your options on the table, at the very least, even if you're among the crowd that thinks that you need Tana for the foreseeable future, you have to have all your options out there. You got to get him into some games where he shows what he can do again, shows that he's healthy, and at the end of the year, and leading into the draft, you can explore trading them. You can explore your options because something needs to give here on this defense. Like, they can't come back with the same defense again next season. They look poised to right now. Like, even if you trade Hutton, he's not even a regular in the lineup. So you're not even taking a regular out of the lineup if you trade him. So I think you do need to consider, you know, trading Tanev possibly. I guess Gudbranson. Like, and I told you about this leading up to this announcement that Gudbranson was being shut down for the year. But I had this file I was working where I was going to have a series of angles or a series of takes that I was going to, call my bringing the city together file. And one of them I did the other night about, you know, why can't we all get behind this idea that the team needs draft picks? And the other one I was going had in the works was of the possibility of a Gudbranson trade. The idea that Jim would turn heel on old Gudbranson and trade him before the draft. And I think that it was, you know, saw it as the type of move that would get everyone on board. The critics, the rebuildists would love it because, let's face it, Gudbranson's not a great defenseman. It hasn't gone well here. He's a third-pairing guy that's going to require too much money. And he's best served. He's honestly, truthfully, I think everyone should acknowledge this point. His best spot in the NHL should be on a third pair on a good team that has a chance to, you know, win playoff series. Like, that's where he's best suited in this league. He's not on a team that can't produce any offense at all from its blue line. Like, he's just not the guy to hang your hat on, right? So, and the Jim supporters are going to support him no matter. It doesn't matter what he does. They are going to support him. They're going to be behind him. So if Jim were able to turn heel right before the draft and trade Gudbranson after pumping him up for like 6-7 weeks, having him on a top matchup pairing with Alex Edler, like, what a plan it would look like that they orchestrated this whole thing, got him to sign this deal that some consider a bargain, and then flip the script and right before the draft trade him. Like, it would look shrewd. It would, dare I say, genius. And I was going to present all this. Now, none of this looks possible now that he's been shut down for the season. And it is something that has been foretold for most of the year. Like, it was December 19th when he came back after missing 12 games. And you and I, now that shoulder brace was put out there on the broadcast, I think it's fair game for us to talk freely about it. We started seeing it then in the locker room. And, like, you know, I think that we were responsible in terms of being media. We didn't report it. We didn't talk about it. It didn't become a topic until on February 9th, you know, it started being shared on social media when I think it was Sportsnet broadcast, was in the locker room and they caught him in this big, huge AC joint brace. And, you know, behind the scenes, you and I would talk often about this injury and whether he would need surgery and, like, you know, how good is it, how good of an idea is it to sign this guy to a multi-year deal when he may need surgery. And it turns out all of those talks ended up playing out because here they've signed him for 3 years and now he's, you know, going to miss the next, hopefully. I mean, best case scenario, he's back for, I guess the idea is he's back for the start of the regular season. I will point out that this happened last year with Gaunce. He had his surgery in April and he didn't play again until November. So I'm not sold that Gudbranson is going to be back for the start of the season, but certainly that's the hope. And all of this raises, you know, a whole nother layer of questions to the Gudbranson story.
Right. And people have, I think most now, people that have read the Provies, like, they've seen that screen cap of Gudbranson in this brace. If you haven't, though, like, it's body armor, essentially. And, you know, my belief is that brace was holding his shoulder together so that he could play in these games. And again,
that's exactly it. It was keeping the shoulder from getting separated, for sure.
But this is a guy who has been sold repeatedly by the management group from the moment they traded for him and now through the contract as well. You know, big physical, you know, this intimidating presence. And there's just no way that anybody could play the game free of mind without thinking about that shoulder, given the contraption that he was wearing. And it would be fascinating to go back and see how often he led with his left shoulder in any kind of physical contact, because there's just no way he was anywhere close to 100%, and ultimately now has been shut down, joining this long list of people whose seasons have come to a premature end. But you're right. And you kind of outlined it last night in the Provies too. You know, what were their options if once that picture gets out there? And people in hockey, like, there's intel, they know what's going on. Even without that picture, I have a feeling that teams would have known that he was damaged goods. But he also had shoulder surgery in 2012, ahead of the season, his second season in the National Hockey League. Wrist surgery last year, missed 5 games earlier this year with a back injury. Like, that, to me, is just a whole bunch of red flags, again, for this guy that's supposed to be your most physical, intimidating force on the blue line.
Right, and so, like, why sign him for 3 years? I don't really understand that. Now I'll say a couple of things. One, in support of Gutty, because despite that shoulder and despite the reality that he knew he needed surgery at some point, he must have known probably a month into the rehab that he was likely going to need surgery. That's my best guess. I've talked to some physio guys who say for sure 2 months into it, they would have known that he needed surgery. And they're probably hoping to wait till after the season. But he did, like, he was game. Like, he did give it. Like, that, I have to give him credit for that. I don't think that he's a great defenseman. I don't think he's a great fit on the Vancouver Canucks. But he gave that team everything he had. He was trying to be physical with the bunt, with one arm, with one shoulder. And he was, more often than not, after January, he did provide some hits. Like, you know, he did provide that physical presence. But there is evidence, there is research, and this is one of the topics that I had in the Provies, that guys after 27 years old start to break down. They start getting to a point in their careers where they miss a lot of games, some of them a ton of games. So my question is, why 3 years? Like, why he was having shoulder surgery? You know, were there teams really? Was the market really going to be 3 years if he made it to July 1st with one arm still recovering from torn labrum in his shoulder? I doubt that. Now, I know the Canucks' position. This is their position. They believe he would have got a better deal on July 1. They see it as a bargain. I know some others have kind of spun this as, well, the Canucks were protecting their asset. They were signing a guy who they would have lost for nothing. And later down the road, they could move him for picks or pick or whatever. I honestly don't think that that's the Canucks feeling at all. I think that they see their team as soft. I see that, I think that they see their team as needing a guy like Gudbranson. I think Jim loves Gudbranson. And I think that they're happy that they got him on a deal that they think is a deal. And we'll see how all of this plays out. I do see that point of view. I am able to see that Jim has built a pretty soft team here. And I start to wonder, like, if he had more physical guys than the lineup, would they have needed Gudbranson as much as they think they do? And the answer probably to me is no.
I like the guy that tweeted you last night too. Gudbranson won the hardest shot contest with one arm, basically one arm. Like, what does that say about the other guys on this team that can't beat a guy who has just one arm in a hardest shot contest?
Right. And, you know, of course people are predicting, what does this mean when he's got two healthy shoulders? Maybe, like, he had a harder shot. Like, I can't even, this is another thing that I can't believe, that in that super skills contest, somehow Eric Gudbranson has a harder shot than Sammy Salo. Has there ever been an instant in any game that you've seen him play where you thought, damn, dude, like, look at that shot. That's as hard as Sammy Salo and maybe harder. Like, have you ever had that thought?
No, but you pointed out in L.A. the other night, as he came down the right side, had all sorts of room. Like, if ever there was a time to unleash the beast and let this shot go. Like, we never see the slap shot in a game. Like, even the last goal he scored in Dallas was a floating wrist shot through a bunch of traffic that just kind of, you know, worked its way in the net. It probably doesn't go in 99 times out of 100, but it did that day. But he had the chance just to, like, wind up on his right side and let it fly. And, you know, maybe the shoulder, like, that was the last game he played, so maybe the shoulder really was bugging him. Who knows? But, yeah, we never really did get to see him.
The shoulder's okay in super skills and not okay during the game. Like, he's a gamer. I just don't. Like, and his dad is out there. His dad wants him on the power play. So bad, eh? Like, he's always talking about how underrated his son's shot is. Maybe it wouldn't be so underrated. Like, his dad, I think, Wayne? Maybe it wouldn't be. Maybe Wayne should direct his comments to his son and say, dude, if you want them to, like, all right, if you show me that you have a shot as hard as Sammy Salo in a game, I will rally around you. I will rally up the troops, as many as I can get behind me, to say, get this man some power play time. I will join Wayne in holding our torches up in the air and saying, like, get this man on the power play. But I, dudes, good Bransons, and this is the mention to the, this is, I'm directly talking to the good Bransons right now. I need to see it in a freaking game. You can't just talk about how underrated it is and only show this fucking shot in super skills. No one cares about super skills. Do it in a game. And I'm telling you right now, I'll rally up as much of the crew as I can.
Well, Wyatt had it in the Provies on Sunday. Like, one of my lasting memories, I think, of the season for Erik Gudbranson. And I think it also speaks to kind of where we are in today's NHL, was when he looked like he had Clayton Keller lined up in the corner in Phoenix, and Keller pulled the old spin move on him, and Gudbranson, like, head first and launched himself into the corner, and Keller kind of walks away and he's got the puck. And this is part of my concern too, because this league is getting faster and younger on a daily basis. We see it all the time. And again, the Canucks are not a fast team, and that's pretty apparent when, you know, they play a lot of these teams that are. But we also see too, Botch, like, guys that miss training camp a lot of times have a real difficult time catching up to the game. And so, you know, best case scenario now for Gudbranson is that he's ready to go for the start of the regular season, but I don't know how much of a training camp he's going to get. I don't know how much of a preseason he's going to get, but that would concern me if...
Well, they better be right on this one, okay? Like, he better be ready for the start of training camp, because they could have shut him down a month ago. They could have shut him down 2 months ago. Like, this whole dog and pony show that, you know, like, it, I don't like, like, I really don't like the dominoes that the kind of breadcrumbs that I'm following here, where, you know, Jim gets his deal, all of a sudden Gudbranson's, like, announced as the top pairing guy by Travis Green, and then, you know, then he's signed to this contract. I don't like the fact that all these guys are represented by Newport. I mentioned that. I don't like it. Like, it just fucking smells. Like, the whole thing just smells to me. But you could have shut him down a long time ago. So if he's not ready to start training camp, he's better be ready to start training camp. That's where I need to see Gudbranson healthy. And if he's not, the Canucks need to wear that, because they could have made this decision a long time ago.
All right, 11 games remaining. For the Canucks, they come home for one, and then it's right back out on the road. You're going to join?
This has been a pretty bleak. This has been about as bleak as it gets in terms of packouts. We need some positivity here. Like, Friedman has brought out this positive side in me that I need to get out at times. And we need to talk some Brock Besser, because he's played 62 games. They were great. They gave us hope. We've seen the drop off without him. I think it's really important that we get the message to anyone who can vote for the Calder Trophy, that this guy absolutely has to be one of the three finalists. There will be players who will finish the season, rookies, with better seasons. Barzal will have more points. Keller may have more points. There may be others who have more points when it's all said and done. But I'm telling you right now, J-Pat and any listener, there is no rookie that meant more to his team than Brock Besser meant to the Vancouver Canucks, and it will be a fucking crime if at the end of the day, this guy is not announced one of the top three in the Calder Trophy voting race.
He's going to be a finalist. I don't have much doubt there. I have faith. Again, you and I traveled around the league. We saw Besser Mania swept into Toronto on that Saturday night, and he put on a show. I think he's garnered enough support. I think people are seeing now just how bad it is, how bleak it is for the Canucks without Brock Besser. I do think that that will play into that. And if voters are smart, and I think most are pretty bright hockey guys, and I think I saw somewhere, too, that ballots are going to be released this year, which I think is fascinating to me as well. Because
they're just voting on it. So I hope it's transparent. I want to see. I will freely announce mine. I think everyone should announce, you know, how they voted and where they voted.
So
I'm coming after you. If Besser's not the number three in the top three on your list, you're going to, you know, that all that negativity, like, be warned. Listen to Friedman. Be warned, because that negativity will be funneled toward you, because we are angry here in Vancouver. We're looking for an outlet, and that will be one if this guy's not a finalist.
I needed you as my sidekick, because I've endured a few things along the way and travel this year, and people, we've well documented the trip through Montreal and Ottawa. But when I flew into Phoenix and I posted the pics, you probably saw, maybe it was a good thing you weren't there, because I have a funny feeling like you would have been all over me. Probably just cackling away with your own luggage in good shape. But mine comes up the baggage carousel in Phoenix, and somewhere between Vancouver and Phoenix, some American Airlines employee, like, it looked like they had taken a baseball bat to my luggage, and I'm not convinced that they didn't. Like, somebody was taking hacks, like BP, on my baggage. Like, it was just absolutely demolished, both sides. Like, it was just crushed. And so I was pissed, because, you know, it's just, again, like, I've had to go through a few things out on the road this year. But I will give American Airlines, the ground staff, the office in Phoenix, they offered me like a brand new suitcase right away. Same size, shiny silver model. It doesn't match the set that my original one was part of, but that's not a big deal. At least it wasn't to me. But when I took a couple pics. I just wanted to have them there as documented proof of what had gone on. And I send them to my wife. And of course, she's worried about the set of luggage, right? Like, she doesn't care about my belongings. And like, did anything fall out? Like, do you have everything? Are you okay? Like, no, it's the, but we have a set. Like, what's going to go on with a set? So the bigger suitcase in the set, the one that I didn't take on this trip, it had a broken wheel. So I send my wife these pics, and she's like, well, salvage the wheels. Take the wheels off this broken one and bring the wheels home. So,
okay. I do have questions about all of this. And I did see the pic. And I got to admit, my first reaction was, I fear that you cut corners in your luggage purchase. Because they'll put the cheap ones on some big sale. They'll announce, like, they do this all the time with luggage. Like, previously $400. It was never $400. But previously $400, you can have it for $99. And I worry that guys like you get sucked in to that scam, because it's just like the bait. They all, like, there's a huge, like, have you ever noticed, like, luggage is always on sale? It's not really on sale. Like, that, it's always $99. They just throw up that fake $400 to draw you in. I felt you got drawn in and try to cut corners on the luggage purchase, and this is the result. Is
and
that
you,
what happened?
You could be right on that. I didn't purchase the luggage myself, so I'm not passing the buck here. It was a wife purchase, but I think it was bought from, like, a big box retailer sort of thing. So, yeah, it probably was a value purchase at that point, and maybe we got what we paid for.
I don't want to accuse the wife of. I thought maybe you purchased it, like, heading into the season.
No, we've had that luggage for a while. So it wasn't a big deal to me. I didn't give a rat's ass about the set. Again, my wife, I think, is a little dejected that we don't have a perfect matching set now, but hopefully she'll get over that at some point. But I was pretty happy because they gave me brand new luggage. So now I'm cruising around.
But you kind of asked for it, man. Like, you included, you dropped there. I saw what you did. I saw everything that you're up to. You tagged the airlines in your little fucking rant about how that you had the picture of. They had no choice, man. You put the you backed them into a corner where they had to buy you some new luggage. So you do admit that, right? Like you were kind of pleading for them to step in and do something about it.
I shame them.
Using the power of your 40,000 followers. And by the way, when did you get to 40,000? Like you passed like iMac, a bunch of people. Have you always been up in that range? I was shocked when I looked. How long have you been up there? How many have you gained this year?
You've seen me on social media. Like you know why people follow.
I don't know. You've become a king, but I don't remember you being in the 40,000 club for like. When did you pass iMac? You know.
I have no idea, none whatsoever. I'm not even sure where he is, but it sounds like you've got some sort of wall chart that you're watching. Does it update in real time? Like, are you? I'm sort of intrigued by who's on your chart. Like, how many people are you following? Not following on Twitter, but on.
You have to because. Employers look at this stuff. Like, they matter. Like, you know, if you're looking for another job, one of the top things they look at is follower count.
Are you looking for another job?
No, I'm not looking for another job, but you have to keep track of this stuff.
Well, I keep track of my own, but I don't keep track of, like, other guys necessarily. Like, I know that Murph's got a ton. I saw him tweeting yesterday. I think he's gotten into, like, the hundreds of thousands. So, you know, who cares at 40? Like, that's chump change. But I will admit that, yes, I shamed American Airlines. I did. I used the power of social media to try to shame them into action. And I would highly suggest to anybody that if you have issues with the airlines, that's the way to go, is go straight to Twitter. And they don't want any part of it, especially if you have a following. Like, they come at you in a hurry. Let's take this to DM. Like, get this off the main, you know, like, get it. No, let's go over to DM. Bring it over here. They don't want any part. So, like, the lost luggage saga. No, when I lost my luggage and when you lost yours, you know, I took it to Air Canada and to United at that point. And that's the standard response in the airline industry is, shut up. Let's go to DM. Come on, over DM. Bring it. Like, get it out of your timeline. So.
Oh, man. Well, it's worked out. So I guess it is the way to go. I'm definitely going to take note of how you handle. Like, if one thing I've learned, one thing, the top thing that I've learned from you this year is how to handle airlines, man. You've kind of set the tone.
There you go. The podcast providing a public service. I've got a flight to catch, so I got to take that new shiny luggage of mine and head out to the airport. We'll see when you get back to town. Saturday night, the Canucks and the Sharks, the countdown is on to see if the Canucks. It's going to be another playoff game, I'm sure. I mean, I think that's going to be we're going to hear that an awful lot, that it's not a playoff game for the Canucks, but it's going to feel like a playoff game at Rogers Arena.
I can't wait. I'm excited. But I'm mostly excited because I know it's not going to feel like a playoff game. I know that the exact opposite is going to happen of what the picture you've painted. And, I am rather amped for it. And because I'm excited to see if they're going to break this goalless streak.
All right. We'll do
there. Bring us history, as Matt Sakara says. I'm on board the boat captain's plan there. If the city can't experience wins, can't experience the playoffs, bring us futility history.
All right. We'll do one of these from the road next week. Vegas, Chicago, St. Louis, Dallas. It's the last big road trip of the season. The countdown is on. The end is near. The PatCast always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center, where everyone is a part of their hockey family. And, Botch, you'll be happy to know that in the last minute here, I've gained two more followers.
I'll be keeping track. I'll be – are you going to catch me?
I doubt it.
I think you can. I think you give the people the information. Okay, we'll see. Oh, and do I bring a little suitcase on the road or next week, do you think? How did that go?
No, because I was already looking. That the variance in weather between Vegas and Chicago, massive. So it's going to be one of those ones where you're going to have to pack all kinds of stuff just to get you through. Again, another public service we offer here on the PatCast. For Botch, it's J-Pat on Province Radio. Thanks for listening.